Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Well, good morning. That's right. Take a stretch. Walk down to the kitchen. Pour yourself that first cup of joe. Now wait for it. Wait for it.
Lou Manfredini here with you, the Mr. Fix-It Show on 720 WGN.
You're listening to Lou.
Ann is in Naperville. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are you?
Your calls all morning till 10, where there are no stupid questions.
But, Lou, what about those deep found stains that we get
in toilets?
Right here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning, Chicagoland. It's Dave Player in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studios on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. And first time ever, very excited to be hanging out with Rob Hard. Rob, how are you, my friend?
Doing well, doing well. Nice to be working with you, finally.
Happy, yes, exactly. Happy holidays to you. And a tradition, as I fill in for Lou, we will have some Bloody Marys coming in here, gentlemen.
Awesome.
Which we have to do.
Like we haven't had enough?
No, like you haven't had enough over the next couple of days. 312-981-7200. We're going to open the phone lines right away. And joining me are the experts to take your calls throughout the morning, and that's Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. Good morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you doing?
How were the holidays for you?
Awesome.
I find it always funny that the one thing that that happens around the holidays when you have guests over, and we had a holiday party, we had family over last weekend, is you really look around the house to figure out what you haven't fixed all year long.
Yes, and worse in our homes.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, yes, our wives, spouses, et cetera, like just on your butt for getting things done, obviously, as well.
I think I've gotten mine to finally just give up.
You broke her down.
I broke her down, yes.
Is that how it is, you know, when you own your own business, your own construction business, is getting to your own house is obviously the toughest?
Well, the funny thing is she can do it too.
Oh, but is that right?
But when it's our home, I have to do it.
Nice. Well, I notice I like just little things. I mean, just besides like, okay, you got to mud up the walls and paint the trim and do just some house cleaning stuff that has to be done. Light bulbs need to replace. You know that the curtain rod is coming out of the wall. There's like a million things.
You've been to my place.
Yeah, exactly. But there was one thing, you know, my wife was looking to call somebody on because I was traveling and we just had to get stuff done. And you got to watch who you're calling too, because, you know, she got two quotes for the same job. One was $75. One was $300. Mm-hmm. So you got to make sure that you're, you know, getting some good referrals, talking to the right people, and making sure that you're getting that done the right way.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and the big thing is the insurance. People always forget about that. They hire some guy, handyman, and doesn't have insurance. If he's on a ladder, he falls down in your house, and he doesn't have insurance, your homeowner's insurance is going to have to cover that.
Wow.
And people don't realize
people
it.
Feel uncomfortable probably about asking that stuff, but that's just what do you ask typically when you're looking for a good handyman to come over to the house?
Well, I mean, obviously the referrals are the best, but before you actually have them do any work in your home, make sure that they have workman's comp and liability insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that unusual. It's not a weird request because you want to make sure you cover yourself.
Well, first, let's refresh ourselves a little bit about you guys and your companies. Let's start off with Mike. You own Creative Carpentry. Tell us a little bit about your business.
I'm a certified remodeler out of the far west suburbs. We're based out of Bolingbrook. We're primarily residential remodeling, but we do some commercial also. I've been in business since 87, so almost 30 years. And that's the scoop.
You were telling me out in that you started actually doing some consulting, like with Milt Rosenberg on his show.
Well, that's how I got started on this.
Yeah.
I had dinner with Lou one night, and he said Milt Rosenberg was looking for somebody to have an interview with. So I did that, and then he called me back a few weeks later, and then I've been doing Lou's show, filling in since. So it's been maybe 15 years.
That's very cool. 312-981-7200. Calls and texts are starting to come in. Give us a call, folks. We'll be giving away some prizes throughout the show as well. Jim from Tate Enterprises, tell us a little bit about you.
Yep, yep. Mike and I run in similar circles. I'm also a certified remodeler, and I do. We're out of Hinsdale. We do kitchens, bathrooms, basements, mostly residential stuff, room additions. Yeah, and we've been in business. Well, I've been in the business for 20 years. I'm just a rookie, apparently, compared to my dad in 30 years. That's impressive. We mostly cover that area. So Hinsdale, Western Springs, Burr Ridge, Clarendon Hills, kind of work in a small circle there. It's nice.
Very cool. You're going to hear Mike and Jim throughout the whole morning, and you're going to get to hear their expertise. And again, Creative Carpentry is Mike's company, and that's creativecarpentry.net. You could simply call 630-892-0720. And for Jim, go to tateent.net, and that's 630-986-0855. And we'll keep talking about that throughout the show as well. Now, besides taking your calls, and again, phone lines are open, 312-981-7200, our new To Lose segment this morning will feature a product called Mr. Beam's Ready Bright System, which provides a new way to keep your home safe and bright during big storms, electrical outages. You know, sometimes just going around the house, and we have a pretty big house and three kids running around, you know, if those lights go out, we're in big, bad shape.
Especially if you have stairs.
Yeah, especially when you have stairs. I mean, we've had those little plugins that we've used for quite some time, but those burn out over time. I mean, those lights, you know,
and they're a little unattractive kind of.
They are a little bit. So this is cool because, and we'll talk about this a little later, it's a main system you plug in and you can just pop these things throughout the house. So they're very cool. We'll talk about that. Then later on at 8:35, in honor of, Ace Hardware's Tim Kerrigan, we'll talk about converting the lighting in your home to LED, the energy savings and saving money on your electric bill, and more in the new year. Plus, we'll be giving away, I think, a $200 gift card, and we're going to be giving away gift cards and stuff throughout the morning and prizes with your calls, again, at 312-981-7200. I've got actually a text that came in already talking about my wife, 773. My wife always leaves the garage door open. I can never see it from the inside the house. Is there an app or a product we can use to close the garage door remotely, or will it close itself after a certain period of time?
I've never seen one that closes itself, but no. I do know that I think it's Chamberlain that makes a garage door opener now that has a smart feature where it connects into your internet in your house, and there is an app for it, and you can close it remotely from your app. The other thing that I've done in my own house, because, you know, a lot of people have that problem, you can't see the garage door. It's usually, you know, in the front of the house and underneath something, so it's hard to see. But the other thing that's kind of helpful too, that is maybe easier than changing the garage door openers, alarm systems. If you have an alarm system installed on your house, you can put a sensor on the garage door. And then at night, it would tell you that there's something open, you know, like a window or a door, and it'll show up that your garage door is open.
Chamberlain also has, and I'm sure some of the others make it, but I happen to know they do, a plug, almost like the nightlight, but it's a little receiver, and it tells you if the garage door is open or closed. So you can put it like in the master bedroom, plug it into one of the outlets, and if you go to bed, at least it's not going to help you if you're not home, but if you go to bed and that light's red, you know your garage door is open.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Well, 312-981-7200. We're going to take Lou's first call, and we're going to give away a Lou Malnati's gift certificate right after the break next on 720 WGN. All right, Dave Player back in with you and Lou Manfredini's Mr. Fix-It Show here on 720 WGN. And let's see here. We got Lou's first caller. We've got Rick on the line with a question. We were just talking about this, about garbage disposals. Hey, Rick, you're on 720 WGN. How you doing, buddy?
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Excellent. What's your question, pal?
After 18 years, garbage disposal basically stopped working and have no idea the first step on how to replace it.
Did you try the circuit breaker on the bottom of it first?
Yes, there's power coming to it. Everything's fine. I just think it just has to be replaced.
Okay, I'm just saying on the bottom of those disposals, there's usually like a little square red button, and that's
like
a reset.
Button.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just like to try that first because that could be a simple fix and you're done. Now you know it's I hate to use the pun trashed. But you want to replace it? Is that what you're looking at?
Exactly.
Okay. They're fairly simple to replace if you're comfortable with doing electric. You know, you shut off your power and disconnect that electric. go ahead and there's a ring. If you look up underneath, right at the where the disposal makes contact with the sink, there's a right. ring. It's like a circle with these little loops on it. You want to turn that, and it you just give it about a quarter or a third of a turn, and the whole unit will just drop down. Okay.
Okay.
So you have your hand on it, because as soon as you get that off of there, it's going to come down, and then you'll just basically swap out parts and put the new one in. They're fairly simple if you're comfortable sticking your head underneath the counter and working on that electric. Plumbing, it should all be done pretty simply. It's all by hand. Those okay. fittings usually are just hand tight.
And then as far as horsepower, because I've noticed there's like third horsepower, half horsepower.
Do you use yours a lot?
Fairly. I think the one we have now is a half horsepower, so I was probably going to do the same.
Yeah, I would consider staying that then. They're a little different. If you've had yours for 18 years, they're a lot quieter nowadays. You're going to really like it, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of InSinkErator. It's usually what I put in. And if you have an InSinkErator, usually there's a logo right on the that's called the throat there, where it attaches to the sink. And if
right.
the nice thing about InSinkErator is the way everything connects and attaches is really not changed in the 18 years since the one you have was put in. It's all pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do have to make sure to disconnect the plumbing before you drop it, because you could drop those pipes, depending on what they are, even PVC, they could break
the weight of that
the weight
unit,
of the
yeah.
unit. Yeah, yeah. So
okay,
but other than that, they're pretty straightforward these days. Something to think about too. We put cords on ours, and that's a fairly easy changeover from what you may currently have. In the old days, they used to be hardwired, meaning like a flexible piece of conduit used to connect them. And nowadays, they make them where you can just connect a cord to it, just like you'd plug anything else in.
Just make sure okay. it's a grounded plug yeah, that yeah. you're using.
Right.
But what's nice about okay. those is okay. that if you have a problem, you can easily unplug it without having to go to a circuit breaker.
Yeah.
And Rick, hang out the line. We're going to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Joey will get right with you. Thanks, buddy.
Do we get one, too, for answering?
we'll get you a prize, guys, as well. Absolutely. Nick, you got a question about a garage door. You're on 720 WGN. How are you, buddy?
Good. It's not a question, but there is a company called Connect Sense, and they're in Naperville. And I purchased a little Wi-Fi-enabled box that has a sensor on it. Motion detector. You put it in your garage, and it'll tell you whether your garage door is open or closed. It comes with an app. And they also have an option if you wanted to use a water sensor, which I have by my hot water heater in case there's a leak. And it's a neat thing. I think it's about $179, and you can choose either the motion sensor or the water sensor.
But do you know if you can open or close that overhead with that app?
I am not sure, but at least it'll tell you whether it's open or closed. Yeah. But I don't think it'll trip the door open or closed.
Okay.
But it's Connect Sense. I guess it's ConnectSense.com. It's made by Grid Connect in Naperville, and you can look up all the information online.
Awesome. Thank you, Nick.
There's a lot of that coming out now with the apps. I use
Connected
Insteon.
Home is what Ace has. Yeah.
Home automation.
Got them where, cameras, water sensors, thermostats, the whole deal.
I was going to say 224 says many garage door openers these days have time to close features and do close themselves also. And Chamberlain does make a product called Gateway that
awesome.
Does that as well. So there's a little
good.
Something there as well. One of the texts, let me see here, that just came in. Is there such a thing as a person who specializes in roof and attic inspection? I would like an opinion from someone who has not tried to sell me something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you would, a regular home inspector would do something like that. Like, just like when you sell your house, and you have to have it inspected, a home inspector, and inspectors are licensed. So they're not trying to sell you anything, because their job is only to inspect. They're not selling anything.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. 312-981-7200, taking your calls and texts. Kathy, you've got questions about glass doors. Good morning to you.
Well, no, not glass. They put a fiber. I live in a condo.
Okay.
This is the third door we've had on the outside door.
Like your front door you're talking
about. Yes, the front door. And the fact of it is, I talked to Lou several weeks ago. I said it slams. it slams. So I took a video. The door closes. The door will close real slow, and all of a sudden, it slams.
Okay, is this your storm door or the actual door?
This is the actual door.
And it has a door closer on it?
Yes, okay. And they have played with the door thing. You know, okay. They played with that. That doesn't work.
It's a hydraulic one? It's what, like the big box at the top of the door?
Yes. And they have, you know, adjusted that. But the back door, which has never been touched, you can tell the difference. When it closes, it clicks into the latch. I live on the first floor, so you can imagine what it's doing to my apartment.
Yeah. They can be kind of tricky. So depending on who's doing the adjustment, if it's just the maintenance man, he may not be aware. But there's multiple adjustments typically on those. There's a closing from full open to almost closed. There's a speed for that. And then that last distance, there's another one for that last little bit. There's multiple adjustments that have to be made, and you have to do a certain order to make it work right. So depending on who's adjusting it, if it's just a maintenance guy, he may not be aware of that.
Well, the thing of it is, these doors were not ordered. We did not have a door company. It would have made sense to have a door. And the problem is, when the door slams, you know, the piece that goes down that, you know, closes the door. The air comes in.
Yeah.
The air comes in, and the cold air, and what it's doing is it's affecting my apartment because the heat in the hallway, I couldn't get my door open, my front door.
Well, who actually installed the new doors?
The management company has a construction company, and they're the ones that did it. What they did then, after they found out the doors were all slamming, they had someone come in and put pieces of wood inside the door. Now the door is heavier. And that's not helping the slamming of the door.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they just need to get somebody in there that understands how the door closers work.
Would a carpenter or would a door company be the...
I would say a door company over a carpenter because that's not really what most carpenters install. They'll install the door and the frame, but a lot of them don't do the door closers. You need somebody who's familiar with door closers.
So do you call like a Pella and Anderson, or is there an association, you know?
I think I would call a commercial door company.
I was going to say, yeah, you really need to deal with someone that does commercial doors because in residential, we never really see the
unless it's an ADA situation, we don't put a door closer in. So I would look for a commercial door installation company or supplier and see what they say.
Do they have those in a phone book? Do I look on the computer? You know, I mean, what kind of
Look up commercial door installation. And see what you find. That would be my first thing to look at.
On the computer, yeah.
Yeah, on the computer.
The other thing, I would just quickly say that there's several different manufacturers of those door closers, and a lot of times what Mike's talking about, those adjustment screws, they're not real well labeled in terms of what does what.
Yeah.
And there's, like Mike said, there's got to be at least four or five screws on there, and you'd think that, you know, oh, just tighten this one and it should slow everything down, or if I open it, whatever. But it's not quite that simple. But what I was going to say is if you do have a computer and you find the brand of that closer and you go on their website, usually you can find, you know, a legend that shows you this screw does this, this screw does this, or this screw does this.
And you might be able to get support off of that and find somebody local in the area that knows those closers.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason is, I mean, the door goes real slow, and then all of a sudden it
slams.
And then it slams.
Yeah.
And there's adjustments for that. And it's supposed to do that. It's supposed to go slow and then make a quick jerk at the end so that it latches. So
but
it's normal.
No click. There's no, see, that's just it. That's what I'm missing. There is no click like at the back door.
Yeah.
That clicks.
Yeah.
I'm
so
sure,
is a fiberglass door the wrong thing to get for these kind of, for a condo?
No, my guess is that what happened was the door that they had in there originally was a much heavier door, which required the closer to actually have to work a little harder. This door is probably significantly lighter, and so the closer needs to be adjusted to compensate for the weight of the door. So they tried to fix it mechanically by adding some weight to the door.
Yes,
where
they
really
did.
they need to spend a little time doing some adjustment to the closer, because the closers don't care what kind of door it is.
Yeah.
They'll work on a, you know, on a really thin door that doesn't weigh anything, but it's all in how it's adjusted.
Well, I appreciate your help. I hope this, you know, talking to somebody that I'm frustrated. Yeah. And I did a video.
Yeah,
I did a video.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is frustrating.
Thanks,
Kathy. Go online and see what you can find out. It might help you.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too, as well.
We should get a gift card for that. We worked pretty hard for that one.
I got breakfast for you. I bought you guys breakfast. And Bloody Mary's coming up here from Weber Grill, by the way. Downtown Weber Grill does a great breakfast. They got a great New Year's thing coming up, too. We'll talk to them as well. 312-981-7200. Jim, Kevin, Ellen, and other folks, please hang on. We'll do this more after the news next on 720 WGN. Dave Player in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises here on 720 WGN. We're taking your calls, questions, problems, issues, 312-981-7200. You can call and you can text. Kevin, you've got a question about trim edge table. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah. Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, I have a quick question. I have for a motorhome. It's a table that goes in a motorhome. It's a little 2-foot by 3-foot rectangular table. And the edging is messed up. So I stripped off the old edging, and I'm having a tough time locating where I can go to buy some edging. I've tried on the internet, and I can't find anything. I was hoping you guys could help.
Is it like a T-molding?
No, it would be like I've seen like the stuff that I found on the internet is just like some kind of iron-on stuff. But
so it's a laminate.
It's just one of those... you know, like laminated table, and it's got like the veneer top.
Is it a wood or a plastic laminate?
I would say the very top surface is more like a plasticky kind of,
like your kitchen countertop kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay. You can find that. Are you trying to put wood on it?
I've tried
all those. They don't have it. And the only things that I can find on the internet are big, like 250-foot rolls. I mean, I need like, you know, less than 15 feet.
I could swear I bought it at Home Depot. Iron-on type.
Are you trying to put wood on it, like a wood laminate, or are you trying to do more like a plasticky kind of laminate, like a Wilson?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for a plastic. I've seen it before where it's like, it's almost like a... like a tough plasticky material, but obviously it bends. And I was hoping to find some type of adhesive one instead of an iron-on situation, because that seems to only come in like wood, and I'd rather not go with the wood because that's what broke on the old one.
Yeah. Find like a Wilson Art dealer in your area that sells laminate tops, and I would just contact them and tell them you need a 2-inch wide, you know, strip, you know, 5 feet long or whatever, and... they could probably cut something. If you want wood, I do know a place that does wood ones. Home Depot does sell the wood ones, but it's only 3/4 inch tall, so it depends on the thickness of your table.
Yeah, I need 1 inch, right. One, so you mentioned Wilson Art?
Yeah, Wilson Art. They're
high-pressure laminate.
Yeah, a laminate company that makes the laminate material. And then you've got fabricators that make the counters out of their material. But if you want, I can tell you for sure if you want, and they may have another solution out there. But there's another place out by me not far. It's called Owl Hardwoods.
Yeah, they got one in Des Plaines, too, I believe.
The one I go to is in Villa Park. They sell laminate edging. It's called edge banding, just so you know. So when you call places, you'll know the right terminology, which helps a ton. You're looking for edge banding at least 1 inch tall. Usually you buy it a little bit taller so you can trim it. And I know they sell wood ones at Owl for sure. And it's iron-on, pressure adhesive with an iron, and they sell it all the way up to, I think, 1.5 inch thickness.
Even if it's iron-on, you can put on your own adhesive. You can double it up like that. Also, did you try Rockler? Rockler.com, I think. Mm-hmm. They might sell it.
No, what is that, Rockwood?
Rockler.
Okay.
And they sell a lot of that kind of stuff. I'm not positive they have the PVC or the plastic type, but they sell a lot of that kind of product. So,
Outstanding. Thank you for your help. I appreciate it. Yeah,
thanks, Kevin. Welcome. Happy New Year to you, buddy.
Take care, guys.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Jim, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question about attic insulation.
Yes. How are you guys?
Good. Happy New Year to you.
How you doing?
Happy New Year. So I'm on the south side. I got an old Chicago bungalow. No insulate. It's got some insulation in some spots, and then there's none in others. And I've had a couple guys out with the spray foam. They're talking about spray foaming with the closed cell just right on the roof joists, and there's no vents. I guess like you just plywood in the mushroom vents that I got up there. Mm-hmm. I don't have a soffit. It goes right down to the double brick. And okay. I'm looking for some feedback on that, if it's what they are doing now. I know it's still kind of new. And
It's not that new. It's been around for a while. It's a very good system.
You can. It kind of depends. So there's two ways. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just wondering, there's no vent then in the attic and behind the knee walls and above the ceiling once I finish that off?
Yes. Well, that's right. So it kind of depends, right? So do you have ventilation up there now? You said mushroom vents, but do you have eave vents? Like, is there air coming in from underneath and
going? Well, there's no eave, so it'd have to be a gable vent, correct?
There's no gable. No, they put mushroom vents down low.
So you just have have mushroom vents, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
correct.
So the thinking probably is that you don't have any fresh air coming in. You only have a way for heat to get out. But if there's no fresh air coming in, you're really not circulating a lot of air up there other than what might be blowing in from the roof. So you can do a closed cell foam insulation. And the concept there is that you're heating the entire house as opposed to just heating your floors.
You're heating the attic space also.
You're also heating the attic space. And you can do a closed cell up there, which is fine. It's a fine system. It's considerably more expensive. Have they reviewed that with you yet? That's usually the number one drawback is the cost.
Yeah.
We went over the cost a little bit.
And they would have to close off those vents, obviously.
Yep.
Right. The vents get closed.
Yep. The idea is that you're stopping air and moisture from coming into the house. Think of it like putting your house in a big Ziploc bag. You're stopping air from coming in through the attic in general. And so the concept is, like I said, you're heating the entire space. So if air flows from your main floor into the attic, you really don't care because it's trapped up there as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
My concerns then, somebody brought it up, if it voids a warranty on the shingles or anything, or if the, if your roof boards are bad.
Well, you shouldn't have that problem because it's physically bonded to the underside of your roof. There's no air flowing through there. Not like you would have an open bat insulation. Does that make sense? Where you're going to have the ability for air and moisture to get through there. So that's why you want to have that air flow to keep the moisture down. But you're not going to have that problem with the spray.
Yeah, the spray has no contact with the shingles.
All right, thanks for the call, buddy. Appreciate it, Jim. All right, let's take a look at Michael. Michael, you got a question about an exhaust fan.
Hi, this is Michael. I'm calling in regards to my future mother-in-law's house. We were down there for the holidays this week. And
she's got you fixing stuff already.
She lives by herself. She's got an exhaust fan in the bathroom. It's metal. What she's having problems, though, with is condensation forming on it and then leaking into the bathroom itself. It's a single-story ranch. Was built probably late 80s, maybe early 90s. Hasn't been a problem up until recently. She's had roofers out that have looked at the place and whatnot. They said it's not a roof leak. So much like the last caller, I'm wondering if it's something maybe insufficient, insulation. And I haven't popped up in the attic to take a look yet, but I was just hoping to maybe get a couple ideas as to where I can start poking around and looking as to what may be the cause. Much like you told the last caller, is the house maybe in a giant Ziploc bag and it's just, leaking back into the bathroom.
Well, a couple things. If you're going to poke your head up there, first make sure that it's vented to the exterior, not just into the attic space. That's number one. Two, if it's that corrugated, like slinky type hose, get rid of that.
Okay.
That's going to be a problem. Normally what we'll try to do is if there's an overhang on the house, mm-hmm. we'll vent it to an overhang and down.
Okay.
And the theory that I have is
yeah, there is a gable exhaust fan underneath the gutter line that's supposed to run out. So okay. I'm wondering maybe is it blocked?
Well, the theory is when this fan is operating, it's taking moist air and it's starting to go up into the attic space and it gets to the cold, mm-hmm. the moisture turns back to water, the warm air turns back into actual water. Mm-hmm. So we try to pitch that line to the outside so that it drains that way. Because sometimes what will happen, if it's pitched the other way, it'll just run right back down the ductwork and back into the room.
Gotcha.
The third is insulate that ductwork so that it has less tendency to turn back to moisture and it'll eliminate out the house and be done.
And I can just do that kind of like a plumbing type wrap?
Yeah.
Same concept, basically?
Yep.
Okay, awesome. I think that's a great start for me. I got some places in the honey-do list starts. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Michael, since you're so kind to help your mother-in-law, how about for you an April Air event-based thermostat sent over to you?
Okay, sure.
All right, we're going to put you on hold, and that is brought to you by the leaders in Chicagoland's indoor comfort, American Weathermakers. Take control of your temperature and the air you breathe. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Thanks for the call, Michael. Ellen, you've got a question about a window well cover.
Hi.
Hi, good morning to you.
One second. Let me just see if I can get this. Okay. Hi. I was wondering, my basement leaks when it rains, when we get a lot of water. Would window well covers help that?
It's possible. Water is tricky. You kind of have to have a little bit of knowledge of what is causing the water to come in. In a lot of cases, particularly in the area I live in, and it's very flat. And so what actually happens is when the ground gets really saturated with water, water actually starts coming up the window well because the ground is so saturated that it's...
Oh, yeah.
And water always finds the path of least resistance. So you have a big well, which also can be known as a holding tank. So it might help. It kind of depends. In other words, if you've got gutters that are flowing straight into your window well, I would suggest a window well cover so that you don't have water, additional water pouring in there.
And try to eject that water further away from the home, from the downspouts, get extensions to get a little farther away from the foundation.
But if like those rubber extensions?
Anything to get the water further away from the house.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Mm-hmm.
Siding. Some of my siding in my house is loose. How do you fix that?
Type of siding it is? What type
of siding? Yeah, it's like I have aluminum siding on my house and some of it's loose. Like can I just nail it down?
The bottom part's pulling up?
Yeah.
They interlock, so you have to reclip it. There's a tool you can get that kind of helps do that. But you'd probably be better off calling somebody who's familiar with it, because with the aluminum, if you don't do it right, you're going to bend it all up and then it's no good. It's not as forgiving as vinyl siding. One other thing on your window well leak too. All those window wells have little drains in them. If you look inside there, you should see a little grill. If you don't see a grill, you want to dig down and make sure that it might have a little bit of gravel over the top of it, but make sure that it's not clogged with debris, because if that's the case, now instead of that rainwater coming in and going into your ejector, it's just filling up your window well. So sometimes there's garbage or mud has clogged it, and you just got to clean it off, and that might help too.
Thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ellen. Have a happy new year.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. And we'll take one more. Steve, you're on 720 WGN. What's your question, pal?
I got a couple of questions.
Sure.
One is, how do I find, we want to tear down a wall and put like engineered lumber that would support the upper floors. How would we go about searching for an engineer to give us specs on that piece?
Yeah, typically an architect can spec what they call a header. It sounds like you want to remove a wall and put a flush header like in construction. You want the ceiling to be totally smooth all the way across where this wall was, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so usually an architect can help you with that. They're usually certified to calculate loads and all that kind of stuff to make sure you have the right size header.
Okay, so yeah. Any architect or somebody that, cause we would be doing the construction, I mean, tearing down the wall ourselves, pretty good at that.
Okay.
It's just that engineered part that I want to get correct.
Yeah, just make sure before you start tearing apart that you have everything supported. You know, you need to put bracing up, because if you're going to take out members that, like a door header that's holding something up above it, you want to make sure that it's all secured. If an engineer or architect comes out and looks at it, he might be able to help you at least figure out what you need to do. But you got to be careful. You know, you don't do it right, you have your second floor on your first floor.
Gotcha. Right. Yeah, we don't want that. No. Then I have a second question regarding plumbing. We replaced a filter or something in an upstairs bathroom, and now when we turn on the water, the plumbing knocks. It's quite annoying, and we've like turned off the water and, you know, flushed the air out of it, but it's still, turn like a, you know, flush a toilet downstairs, and then we have this knocking sound in the walls.
What kind of filter was this on the second floor? Like a drinking water?
It was a faucet that was leaking water, so we replaced it, you know, pulled out the, it's one of these all-in-ones where you turn on the water and then the, you know.
Are you talking about for the tub shower. Or the, okay, for the shower, okay. So
yeah.
Somebody replaced the shower valve?
Yes.
Okay. It sounds like what they may have done then is, in the process of replacing that, they loosen the rough-in plumbing from the framing, so it's kind of hanging in there now. It's not strapped down. So every time you turn that water on and off, those pipes are shaking, and they're probably hitting the framing. That's going to be my first guess. What you might be able to do is if you take that trim off of the shower valve and put your hands on it inside there, because you have enough room, you can kind of get your hands in there. Have somebody flush that toilet downstairs or whatever and see if you can feel that pipe move. It may have been that they loosened the pipes off the framing and it's not strapped down anymore.
Great. Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. All right. 312-981-7200. Mike Holmes and Jim Sullivan taking your calls, questions, problems, and issues. It's Dave Plyer and Frelew on 720 WGN.
Did you know that 72% of us experience one or two power outages a year, and that 23% of us have several? What makes this a big deal is that falls are a leading cause of home injury fatalities, and of course, when it's dark, we are all more susceptible to those dangerous falls. So what's it like in your house when the power goes out? Make your home safe during these unexpected times with this week's new Tolu 2, called Ready Bright. Ready Bright is an innovative power outage lighting system that runs on batteries and installs in seconds. The system includes a power outage detector that doubles as a flashlight and plugs right into a standard wall outlet. So when your power goes out, Ready Bright instantly provides bright light to your entire home for hours on end. Prices vary depending on the lighting packages you want, but range from $17.99 to $99.99. Don't ever find yourself in the dark again. Power out, lights on. Find out more at PegasusLighting.com. I'll put all this info up on Lou's Mr. Fix-It page at WGNRadio.com, on his Facebook page, and also on VibeScore. Download the free app on your iPhone and vibe about it. That's this week's New to Lou 2.
All right. Thank you, Lindsay. It's Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises here on 720 WGN. We're taking your calls, questions, problems, issues via call or text 312-981-7200. So this new Bright system, the Mr. Beam's Ready Bright system, provides a new way to keep your home safe and bright during storms and power outages. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I found this for a client. I was looking at some information, and it's kind of a neat product because it's got a flashlight that you plug in, so it's a constantly charged flashlight.
So you can walk around with that too,
But the flashlight monitors your electrical system. So when your system goes down, your power goes out, it will activate that flashlight and it'll light up. That's kind of typical. The thing that I liked about it is it has all of these remote, what I call puck lights, that are just battery operated, and you can put them all throughout your house. You can put them in the stairwells. They have some for walls, some for ceilings, and you can put them all over your home. And when that power goes out to the flashlight unit, it activates all of these battery operated lights. So if there's a fire or even just the power goes out, at least you can navigate your home, especially staircases. And then you can always go and grab the flashlight for the areas you don't have the lighting in it. But it's kind of a neat system. It's all interconnected. I liked it.
It's ceiling lights, too, and it's hallway lights. So the ceiling lights are like 4C batteries. The regular ones are 4AA. But that's one thing that we were talking about earlier, that I've got some of those plugins, but they burn out, obviously, after time. These are LEDs, so they're going to last a long time as well.
Yeah.
And it keeps the lights on. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, and it's do-it-yourself.
It's a do-it-yourself.
I mean, I've never seen one, but it looks like it's self-adhesive to the wall or to the ceiling, and that you don't need an electrician, you don't need anything, and yet you've increased your ability to be able to see what's going on when the power goes
out. And you can mount as many of them as you like, you know, if you want one or two, or you want 30 of them.
So, and if you got two electrical boxes in the house and you're controlling different floors of your house, you obviously want to get two of these systems because it's going to control that out of both of those as well. Very cool stuff. And that's new to Lou, too, Mr. Beam's Ready Bright system, and we'll have that up after the show at WGNRadio.com. All right, 312-981-7200. Mike and Jim ready to take your calls and texts right after a quick break on 720 WGN. Thank you, Rob. It's Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show on 720 WGN. We're along with Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises here on 720 WGN. And we're taking your calls, questions, problems, issues, 312-981-7200, as we're having some Weber Grill breakfast this morning.
Yes, we are.
It's delightful. Even the bacon is smoky like it was done on the grill.
It's awesome. My wife normally will come in with us. She's a little upset because there's Bloody Marys and bacon here, and she's Bloody not.
Those are what else do you need besides Bloody Marys and bacon?
You're good.
In the morning
you're
talking about fixing stuff, you know? Yeah. All right.
I'm going to hear it when I get back.
I'm sure you are. Hey, Linda, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question for the gentleman here.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
We live in a about a 35-year-old bi-level, and the lower level has two ceiling lights. The one light is not working right now, and I would like to replace the lights. How difficult would it be? Right now, they're on the same switch. How difficult, and by difficult, I mean how expensive would it be to have an electrician come in and rewire it so that each ceiling light would work separately?
What municipality do you live in?
We're in Portage, Indiana.
Oh, I'm not familiar with them. It will depend on a couple things. If all the homes built there are in conduit, a metal pipe type of situation, it should not be too difficult. I don't want to say it won't be difficult because it depends on how they did it. But when it's in pipe, it's easier. If it's in what they call Romex, which is just a jacketed wire, then it might get a little more expensive because you have to pull another circuit through there to separate them.
Oh, okay.
But an electrician should be able to come out and take a quick peek and say roughly what it's going to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, great. Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Linda.
Yeah, I was thinking same thing. Like conduit would be great if it were, but but even conduit, it could take a while. It depends on how it's wired, like Mike said. But
this is unusual that we're both on the same wavelength.
That's nice. Yeah, I know. It's nice to see.
We usually compliment each other well because we think of different things.
It's also after a couple of cocktails this morning.
I agree with what he said.
Very good. Very good.
Hope that helped.
Barbara, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question about laminate flooring.
Yes, my son has a two-story center entrance house. So when you walk in the front door, the dining room's to the left and the hallway goes to the back of the house. The kitchen's on the left, and there's a living that the area they use as a living room is to the right. So my son wants to take out the carpeting in the living room area and put in laminate flooring. My question is, which way should we run the boards?
Ah, that's the age-old debate. It all depends. I personally like to see them running lengthwise, and I know it does give a little of a bit of a bowling alley effect, but it just always feels to me naturally like that's the right direction.
And then there's the argument of when you walk into the room.
But there is no right or wrong.
There's no structural reason you have to do it one way or the other with the laminate. But
okay, question, if in 3 months they want to do the dining room, too, which is separate from the living room, they should both be running the same way for looks, right?
For continuity, yes. I would think that you'd want them in the same direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right. Let's see here. Roberta, you got a question about your countertop.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Hi. Good morning. This is Roberta. During the holidays, I made some DIY projects, and I used super glue. And I didn't know that it went through the paper that I was, you know, gluing together. And I have super glue all over my countertop. Mm. And we tried, we don't want to do acetone because we read that, you know, it could make a hole in the countertop.
What so type of material really is the countertop, just so we know?
It's Corian.
Corian,
it's
okay. Corian. Okay.
Yeah. And we did have it refinished. We've had it for a while, but it's still a great countertop. It doesn't have, like, big holes in it or anything. I did have it once a gentleman came in and they sanded it really – he sanded it really lightly, mm-hmm. and it was great because it really made it look brand new.
Yes.
I didn't want that expense if there was something that we could do on our own.
Well, you certainly do not – you don't want to use the acetone. That is absolutely true.
Okay.
What I would at least recommend is take a razor blade and use a new one and just very lightly scrape. You know, you don't want to push down hard because the one thing with solid surface like Corian, it is going to be soft. So you just want to very lightly scrape and try to take that off because it shouldn't be into the product. It's just on top because solid surface is non-porous. So it didn't really go into the product. It's just on the surface. So if you can just scratch a little bit, you know, scrape it like you're scraping a window sticker off glass. Scrape it off, and then just take your scrunch pad, you know, your synthetic steel wool that's bonded to your sponge. Everybody has those. And just lightly, with a little bit of water, circular motion, just rub it a little bit, and it should take care of it.
Yeah. I did do that soft sponge, and it seemed like it took the shine off of it for some reason.
Because
in an area.
Well, depending on the finish that they put on. Now, synthetic steel wool like that is it has different grades just like regular steel wool does. So if you're using green, that's going to be a little more coarse. So get the spot off with the green one, and then you can go like to Ace, and I believe they sell the white. The white one is a finer grit.
Oh,
and then take that and just do that, and you just slowly start a small circle and work your way out and feather it. And you just need to keep polishing it till you match that sheen. That's all. The sheen is just done by polishing. If it's polished real fine, then it's going to be shiny. If it's a coarser grit, then it's going to be duller.
Okay. Now, the white sponge, is that in the housewares
or in
the housewares?
It's not a white
section?
Sponge. The sponge thing is what everybody buys. It's the, you know, yellow sponge with the green pad on it. But you can buy just the synthetic, and that's what you want, synthetic steel wool. That's what it's called. And the colors depict the grit. So you're looking for white.
Okay, the white one. Okay, yeah. All right. Well, we will try that. We've got nothing to lose at this point.
No. You really can't damage it. The amount of change that you're doing is so superficial. If you can't get the sheen to match, you can have somebody come out and polish the whole thing.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Roberta.
Thanks.
312-981-7200. Dan, you've got a question about the mixer valves in the shower?
Yes, sir. I was a stationary engineer at College of DuPage for 25 years. I know a little bit about plumbing. And I got two houses, and in one house, I have a bath shower mowing valve that's not a mixer. But up here at Lake Geneva, I have what's a mixer valve. I got a brand-new water heater, and I had the water heater, because of leg problems, I had to take hot baths, and I got 140 degrees coming out of this thing up here, and it's perfect. I want your take on the difference between, you know, the old-fashioned whatever and the new, whether it's a mixer, and there's a nylon thing in there that I took out. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm thinking of a pressure balance valve. Is that what you're...
Well, it's a mixer to keep you from getting scalded. But I have to, because of the new fashion mixers, that are supposed to keep you from getting scalded, you know, because it's a safety thing. And it's just a wife and I up here. We don't really, we know what we're doing. Right. But, you know, I got a thermometer, and I'm getting 140 degrees out of the you know, bath.
The old one.
Faucet.
The old faucet, right?
And the new one.
Oh, okay.
I'll let you run with it, but I just wanted your take on, you know, I don't think you can even buy, like, the old one. Where you could just turn it on, because, I mean, 140 degrees is hot.
Yeah, well, yeah, 140.
What is your question? Are you trying to get one to get hotter? Is that what you're saying?
I like a hot bath.
And it's not hot enough?
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
But I gotta run. I'm using more water because it mixes. Then I got to have my water heater turned up all the way, and it's a brand-new water heater.
Yeah.
Well, so what's your take on shower, you know, water temperature or bath, you know? I know it's supposed to be like maybe 120. I know we're getting technical here, but you go ahead. Go ahead.
I may be completely wrong, but I don't think that that a pressure balance valve / mixing valve, if you have it on full hot, I don't think there's any cold that's being infiltrated to that side. The pressure balance valve, all it's doing is measuring the pressure between the hot and the cold, so that if somebody flushes a toilet or turns on the washing machine downstairs and is drawing hot water, that it doesn't overload the pressure on the other side, meaning that you either get a blast of cold water or a blast of hot water. But as far as the...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, far as the mixing goes, I think if you have it on full hot, the water temperature is directly related to whatever the water temperature you have set at your hot water heater. So, for example, I have a tankless hot water heater in my house, so I can physically go downstairs, set mine at 120 degrees, go upstairs and measure the water temperature. I should get 120 degrees out of my faucet.
Yes, yes. And that's like a recommended water temperature, you know, for safety.
Yeah, I think for a shower, I think it's 112, I think, is what the inspectors are looking for. So when I do a bathroom, they always check, the inspector checks two things on water temperature. He checks it at the faucet because there's no limit on that. So he checks that, and then he'll go over and he'll check the shower, and he'll put both on full hot. And so I guess to your point, you can get you can get limiters in your mixing valve, but you can override those. If you put them all the way to full hot, then there's no restriction.
Yeah, man. I think that's... Like I said, I love 140 degrees.
No, I agree with you. If you don't have kids in the house and it's not a concern, I mean, an inspector would tell you it shouldn't be like that. And if you're having your house remodeled, they'll check it. But if there's no kids in the house and you want full hot, by all means, have a full hot. That's why it's adjustable.
Yep. Well, long-time listener. Thank you.
Hey,
thank you,
Dan.
Thanks very much. Have a nice new year. All right. Steve, you got a question about your toilet, pal.
Hello.
Hey, Steve, how are you? You're on 720 WGN.
Oh, yes. Yes, thank you. In the last couple of weeks, when we flushed our toilet, there's been a gurgling afterwards. Now, in the last 24 hours, it's not flushing as strongly as it did, and the water level in the bowl is lower. Anything I should look for, or should and do I need to call a plumber? That's the problem.
Yeah, I would guess there's probably something stuck in the toilet somewhere.
And it's just that toilet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Do you have kids in the house?
No.
Okay.
Well, no.
No chance somebody flushed a Batman down the toilet or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Chances are there's probably something in the innards of that toilet that are slowing down the flush system, which is throwing like air into the system and sort of making it hiccup because the water isn't flushing through properly. It could be a vent issue, but I would guess that it's probably
something.
If
it's one toilet, it's probably not a vent issue. Yeah. Do you don't throw like floss down the toilet or anything, do you?
I don't.
Okay.
My wife might, but we'll have to see. I don't think she does.
No. It was a rare incident, but I had where a client kept having the toilet kept clogging, and we were trying everything, and eventually I took the toilet out and actually checked in the trap of the toilet, you know, where it has that little snake part, and there was a burr of porcelain from when the toilet was made. And they kept throwing their dental floss down the toilet, and it would hang up on that, and then everything would start collecting on that. And we would clear it out, and it would be okay. And
that's a no-no. No dental floss down the toilet.
So dental floss and the feminine napkins don't go down there.
No, we're beyond that.
Okay. But that would be my thought, is if there's something catching that way.
So the fix is if you're fairly handy, you can go to Ace. They make a toilet rotter, and it's like a hand rotter, and it's just a springish kind of looking metal thing, and you stick it in the toilet, and you turn the crank, and it will sort of clean out whatever's in the trap and whatever else, and they're fairly successful. Okay.
It might just be that, you know, and once you clear that out, you know, something weird got hung up, and it may never happen again.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Happy New Year to you.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks.
All right. 312-981-7200. Much more ahead on 720 WGN. Good morning. It's Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. And I'll tell you, we always love talking to the folks at Weber Grill, and we'd like to thank them this morning. They brought breakfast for us and some Bloody Marys. You know, they've got locations in Chicago, Schaumburg, Lombard, and now in St. Louis. They have a great breakfast in their Chicago location, and that's Fuller Continental. It's Monday through Friday, 6:30 to 10, Saturday and Sunday, 6:30 to 11, and to give you a quick rundown on Weber Grill, their New Year's Eve packages is Marco Sullivan and John Cross. Gentlemen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for bringing the goodies in here. It's really good to have a couple drinks while we're talking about tools and stuff.
We do lighten up a little bit.
They really do. You know, my office and I run a marketing firm during the week with my business partner. We're in Schaumburg. Love the steak, love the salmon, the burgers, the salads. Trevor runs the place. Mike handles the bar in the best vintage old fashion. That's where I met you, actually, is having a cocktail at the bar. Open for lunch and dinner every day, plus breakfast downtown. You offer grilling classes, too, which I absolutely love.
Absolutely, we do. We offer grilling classes once a month in our Schaumburg location, and we have our calendar available on our website at www.webergrillrestaurant.com. And we're also doing grilling classes in a new state-of-the-art grill academy, which will be part of our St. Louis restaurant opening up in 2016. So we're very excited about that as well.
I did one of those classes that actually did teach me how to make a steak. Like what Kevin Coleman always tells me when he does my show is looking ain't cooking.
Yeah, exactly.
So peeking and opening that grill constantly is a problem, obviously.
It is a big problem.
You let it sit and let it do its work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you guys have a special menu and special hours for New Year's at all the locations. Tell me a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, so for New Year's, you know, we're filling up quick, so make your reservations if you haven't already. But we got some really great specials available. Oysters Rockefeller as an appetizer.
Yeah, I saw that.
Got a prime ribeye, which we've actually been running in Chicago the past couple weeks. Terrific steak, obviously prime meat, the best you can get. Colossal Maine lobster tail, it's a one-pound lobster tail, so that's a pretty big meal in itself, along with grilled lamb chops and cedar plank scallops. I'll be available at all the restaurants on New Year's Eve.
Even the soup has like a grilled flavor to it. It's amazing to me. Like everything that's done there. Because you are grilling on these massive, massive kettles.
Yeah. They're 42-inch spun steel grills made especially for the restaurants. We do cook on charcoal inside, which presents its own challenges for us, but is a lot of fun. And they're like grills on steroids. I mean, they're unbelievable.
Yeah, they are amazing. But I mean, you really make everything on there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we were just talking about making salad on a grill, but everything that can touch a grill in any
desserts,
way, shape, or form.
I mean, you're doing desserts on there as well.
Yeah, and we always talk about every day with the staff what makes it Weber, which is it's touched a grill in some way, shape, or form.
And you're open mostly at like 4 to 11, I think, for New Year's.
Yeah, we'll be open for lunch in all the locations for New Year's as well. But these features, yeah, they'll start around 4 o'clock.
And for reservations, where does everybody go?
You can go on the website, which John mentioned, but it's a
Weber Grill Restaurant.
Yeah.
WeberGrillRestaurant.com. And for more on the grills themselves, always visit Weber.com as well. And I'll tell you what, these gentlemen were so kind not only to bring breakfast down to the station this morning for the cast and crew, but they've got a couple of $50 gift cards to give away toward your New Year's dinner or whatever you'd like. And we'll take the 7th and 10th caller at 312-591-7000. We'll do that on the contest line, 312-591-7000. For a free Weber Grill gift certificate. Two of them will give away at $50. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you
for being here. Appreciate it.
I just want to know, do they do the Bloody Marys on the grill too?
Actually, the gardens in the Bloody Mary, the smoked pole of sausage is grilled.
Ooh, okay. Really?
So, yeah, we make sure that everything on our menu at least touches a grill.
That's nice.
Well, my gorgeous wife is not very happy. She's already texted me because she's normally here, and she would like the Bloody Mary, but I can't take it home, so I'm going to have to finish it here.
But garnish with the smoked Polish sausage, pickles, cheese, olives, celery, and there's bacon back there. We got to throw some bacon in there.
And what's around the rim?
Barbecue spice.
Okay.
Awesome. Nicely done.
Yes.
Nicely done. That's Thanks again. Nice. And again, for more information, WeberGrillRestaurant.com. All right, more after the news next on 720 WGN. Blinded by the Light, it's Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises here on 720 WGN. Taking your calls and texts at 312-981-7200. And for a caller in this half hour, we're going to give away a Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday lights, because you got your holiday lights still up. And you can watch the video at lightkeeperpro.com. So give us a call, 312-981-7200. So light bulbs are changing. You've read about it. You've seen it in stores. What do you need to know to convert your home as the classic incandescent light bulb goes away? How much do they cost? How often do I need to replace them? And how do I save on energy? Well, there's only one of the guys that I know that can really break it all down for us, and that is Tim Kerrigan. He is the electrical merchant for Ace Hardware Corporation. Tim, welcome to the show, my friend.
Good morning.
So there are a lot of changes in light bulbs, especially recently, and for many consumers, it must be confusing. What is driving all the changing in lighting right now?
Yeah, you know what? So that's a great question. There is a lot of change that's going on right now in the category. And what really kicked all of this off was the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007. So what happened was legislation mandated that the current light bulbs that they use way back when was very inefficient in terms of energy consumption. So what they did was they mandated some laws into legislation stating that there needs to be an efficient option for light bulbs and for energy consumption. So that happened in 2007, which really kind of kicked everything off.
And there's obviously the halogen bulbs are like 43 watts. There was the CFLs, which I'm not a big fan of at all. In fact, we were talking about that, Mike, a little bit too. The curly ones, it's like a 1950s TV to turn it on. It takes forever to get those bulbs on.
Yeah, we want instant gratification. You flip the switch, we want light.
That's right. Exactly. You know, a lot of negatives to that, too. There was a slow warm-up time for some of that stuff. Can't be used in cold weather.
Yeah.
But LED, now you look at this again. You know, halogen 43, CFL 14, LED is 9 watts. It's obviously the most energy-efficient option that's out there.
Yes, it is. And like you had mentioned, too, so CFL attempted to do that. They attempted to make it where it was a more energy-efficient option, being only 14 watts, but there were a lot of fleas on the dog, and there were a lot of things that the average customer just didn't care for and didn't like about it. And LED really kind of changed the way in terms of being more energy-efficient, being on average about 9 watts when compared to a 60-watt bulb. But didn't have that slow warm-up time. It had a more crisp light. You could really tell the difference in an LED light in comparison to any of the other older technologies.
You also didn't have the mercury in them like you do in the CFL.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. And a lot of people don't realize that after a CFL bulb were to die, you actually have to have that bulb recycled. It did contain mercury, you know, which was something that many people didn't know. And if you dropped a bulb and it smashed on the floor, well, now you have a mercury problem. So LED doesn't have any kind of mercury, and it doesn't contain anything like that. So
now there's ways to save energy. There's ways to save money. And I was just saying that, you know, when we converted a couple rooms in our house, because that's kind of how you do it. You want to do it by a room because the lighting is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Some of the early LED was mostly cool. You could do cool and warm now. So, I mean, it obviously you can look at that. You do a daylight version.
And when you're saying cool and warm, just for the audience, yeah. Not actual temperature, but
right.
Light temperature.
The light temperature, exactly. So like the Reveal, the GE Reveal was more the cool.
Right.
And then the warm white is what we're all kind of used to. You see a lot during the holidays, too, all the lights that are out there. You can totally tell the difference between the warmer, older lights than the cooler LED ones that are out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things that LED is kind of offers is they have really a full gamut of different colors. So you think about it, your old incandescent bulb is more of like a 2700 on that scale, kind of that yellow look. Halogens were a little bit more improved, got more towards that 3000 Kelvin marker. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then many CFLs, people will know it as kind of that blue light, that 5000 Kelvin daylight. So LEDs, there's an option for every one of those. There's a full range of different color temperatures.
Now, there's a couple ways to save money. You've got a couple different scenarios here. One is based on a typical incandescent bulb that's 60 watts. This is just to explain everything. Compared to the LED of 9 watts. Tell us about the energy rate and how that gets you, how you save money over time.
Yeah, so what I did was I basically put together a scenario. If you were to live in the city of Chicago, assuming that your energy rate is about 15.8 cents per kilowatt hour, if you were to replace one incandescent bulb in your house or your apartment, and you ran that bulb for 3 hours per day for 365 days.
Pretty average. Yeah.
Right. You would save about $8.82 per year for that first year for that bulb by switching over to an LED.
But then you're not changing that bulb for like 22 years. And when you think about that, it's a couple hundred dollars over the life of the bulb that you're saving. And you're not changing that bulb ever again.
Yeah. It's about $201.37 is kind of the math that we came up with for the life of the bulb, and that does not consider not having to replace that incandescent bulb.
My father, who's not that old, said, in 22 years, I don't give a damn what kind of light bulb's up here. I'll be gone. So I'm not going to replace it. That's what he says to me all the time. All right, scenario two if you're on for 10 hours a day, because some lighting is on, and you got to think about it from a commercial perspective, a lot of lights are on that long, too.
Yeah, yeah. So on average, the commercial light will probably run about 10 hours per day. So assuming that same scenario, switching an incandescent 60-watt bulb to an LED bulb, now for that first year, instead of saving $8.82, now you're looking at about $29.40 in that first year. So,
yeah. So that's some significant savings. Mm-hmm. As well, when we talked about commercial a little bit, Mike and I were talking off air, you know, a lot of lighting in like retail stores and churches and schools and stuff actually provided some heat as well, because there's some heat coming off those bulbs a little bit. That obviously changes with LED because there is no heat coming off these bulbs.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's a good point. So let's say you're a small business or a small store and you're looking to retrofit your building. If you were to take a look at your current utility bill, the lighting portion of that bill is about 40%. So let's say you want to switch to an LED and you're going to go from an old fluorescent tube that's burning about 32 watts to an LED bulb that's going to burn you about 18 watts. You're cutting that in half. So 40% of that utility bill, you're basically cutting it in half. Now, if you consider some of the other factors, the long life, you know, you're not replacing that bulb on average of about 50,000 hours.
Just labor. Yeah.
Labor alone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Now, what are some of the other benefits? They're longer lasting, energy savings up to 80% in some cases. It's a better quality of light.
It is. Yeah, you know what? It's more of a crisp light. It's the way that the eye will perceive the light, it's much more clear. So if you look at it from a lumen perspective, so we talk a lot about lumens and what that is. So basically what it is for the audience is it's really a measurement of light. It's how bright the light is. So many people think it's watts. It's not really the watts. It's the lumens that you're looking for. So if you were to replace a fluorescent tube, a fluorescent bulb in a store that has
or your
maybe,
basement
or a basement, right? Yeah. And that fluorescent bulb, let's just say, is 2700 lumen, 2700 brightness, and you were to switch it to an 1800 lumen LED bulb, What you'll actually see side by side is the eye will almost perceive that as pretty close of a difference. You won't notice that dramatic of a difference in that lumen output, which many people don't know.
Now, the other thing is, too, when you shop, and I know Ace has a massive selection of LED in the stores, which is very cool. There's some great, obviously great helpful folks there to help you out through this process so you know how to convert some of your bulbs and stuff that you have for water. It's actually clearly marked on the packages as well. It is very clear on how to do that as well. But when you can walk in there, I mean, you just got to tell them what room, how many lights you're doing, and they can solve the problem, and what temperature you want. They'll solve the problem for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're very, very good at understanding what types of questions to ask and how to make sure that that light is exactly what it is that you're looking for from a lumen, from a color temperature, from an application standpoint. You know, they're well aware of those kinds of questions and what to ask.
One of the things that I always think of too, and, you know, just broader picture kind of thing, and you look at the way, you know, the energy is being brought to us and all that kind of stuff. And as you listen to the federal government talking about alternative energies and clean energies and this kind of stuff, that thing you don't often think about is, you know, what your overall consumption is of electricity in your own house. And as we move towards these greener energy solutions, you know, we've already seen, I mean, everybody has seen the introduction of electric cars. And so, you know, those types of fuels and stuff are quickly kind of being pushed aside with these newer, greener energy solutions. And when you look at LEDs and you look at the overall energy usage, so if, in other words, if you were trying to retrofit your house and sort of what they call get off the grid and you wanted to look at solar solutions or you wanted to look at wind power solutions or things like this, it really comes down to how much electricity are you consuming in your house. And when you switch over to LED, you really can easily light your house with alternative energy solutions that cost nothing to maintain. Initial investment up front, yes, just like LEDs, you know, if you wanted to put solar panels on your house. But you really could light your entire house with LED lights where you could never do that with incandescents because of the amount of usage is so much less. It's microscopic compared to what a typical bulb was using.
Money and energy, saving them both. Let's see here. Bob, you have a question, an LED question. You're on 720 WGN.
Actually, I changed my question. That is that tell me about LED, these fixtures in an enclosed fixture. I love LED. And just like you just said, it's something the government does right because this was part of George Bush's Energy Independence Act that created the push to an alternative light source. And we came up with LEDs. I love it. But I have heard some issues of putting some LEDs in like an enclosed fixture. Can you address that for me?
Yeah, I can. So just to give you a little bit of background behind the technical aspect of an LED, just so you can kind of put a little frame of reference behind the question. So what will actually shorten the life of an LED or what kills an LED is heat. So that you think about it, there's a bunch of these little chips that are in within an LED bulb, and then there's all these different ways that you have to keep the chips cool in order for them to maintain whatever the rating of life is. Now, if you start to enclose these light bulbs, let's just say, into a fixture, and you're capturing some of that heat, you're actually going to shorten the life of that bulb. Now, let's say a bulb is rated for 25,000 hours. That doesn't necessarily mean that the bulb's only going to last you 1,000 hours, but it could shorten the life of the bulb over time. So that is a good call out. However, there are a couple bulbs, and you can look for them on the packaging that are that you can actually have within an enclosed fixture. So all of that information is located on the packaging of the bulb, and we actually carry a few as well, that will actually, you could put them in a closed fixture.
Another question, 312, and it's a good question. Will there always be an LED bulb that has a normal base that could be retrofitted into existing light fixtures? I would think it's absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And when they come in various warm or cool options, absolutely.
Yes.
You'll get different mm-hmm. lighting as well. All right, so what kind of gift card do you have you want to give away today? We're going to do a trivia question.
So we are going to give away actually a $200 gift card.
Yeah, that's very cool because I mean there's an investment mm-hmm. up front in doing this LED, so that's a great
sure.
way to kick that off. And it's a great way to do it by room, too. You don't want to do individual lights at a time necessarily. If you're doing a couple lamps, you want to do the two lamps together. You want to do, if you got overhead lighting in a room, you want to do it room at a time.
Yeah, and you always want to target the areas or the room or maybe the application that's on the most. Start with those first.
All right.
That and I think the hard to reach ones.
And the hard to reach ones.
We talk about that. Mm. When we do a remodeling, we put in can lights in a vaulted ceiling. Yeah. We always put LED lighting in for the client because you can't beat that. You know, it's like they'll never have to get that ladder out and fix it.
All right. So here's a trivia question, and we will take your calls at 312-981-7200. Both questions about LED and for the contest as well. Edward H. Johnson put the very first string of electric Christmas tree lights together. Johnson, Thomas Edison's friend and partner in the Edison Illumination Company, hand-wired 80 red, white, and blue light bulbs. So it was red, white, and blue. Very patriotic. And wound them around the Christmas tree for the first time. What year was that done? 1882, 1900, or 1925? We'll take your answers and calls after this on 720 WGN. State player in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises here on 720 WGN. And we're going to start taking your calls again. Questions, problems, and issues, 312-981-7200. All right, the trivia question was to win a $200 Ace Hardware gift card. Edward Johnson put the very first string of electric Christmas lights together. He and his friend Thomas Edison, he was his partner, hand-wired 80 red, white, and blue lights together and wound them around his Christmas tree. What year was that? Was that 1882, 1900, or 1925? John, answer? John, what's the answer, buddy?
Hi, Dave. Hi, guys.
Hi.
1882.
You got it, brother. You got it. 1882. $200 Ace Hardware gift certificate. And that'll help you kind of kick off your LED conversion in your home. Thanks, John, for the call.
We'll be doing that.
All right, buddy.
Guys. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you as well. So, you know, again, overall benefits, just to sum up LED, what it does for you.
Well, most importantly, it's going to save you money every month. You know, by converting over, what it'll do for you is it's going to use less watts, it's going to use less energy, and you're going to save money on your bill. You know, so some of the secondary options are they're going to last a long time. It could be anywhere from 5,000 hours to 25,000 hours for bulbs. And it's really going to make those hard-to-reach places a little bit easier when you could retrofit it out one time and be done with it. And it's a better, more crisp, clear light.
And for more information, you can visit, over 4,000 or 5,000 Ace Hardware locations around the country. But if you want to get them online and actually learn more about it, too, you can go to acehardware.com. Tim Kerrigan, thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it. All right, much more ahead, 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave in for Lou on 720 WGN. And right after 9, we'll be taking your calls and texts and questions again, 312-981-7200. And our first caller will get a Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets. Watch the video at lightkeeperpro.com. We'll have other prizes as well. I got a couple other texts that came in, so I grabbed Tim from Ace Hardware. Does Ace recycle old bulbs? That's a good question.
Yes. So the CFL bulbs, those are the bulbs that will need to be recycled, or a linear fluorescent tube, something that's in your basement. Anything that will contain mercury does need to be recycled, and Ace will help you recycle those as well.
Are there LEDs that are made to withstand the vibration of a ceiling fan?
Yeah, and by nature, LED bulbs will actually be, they'll withstand that vibration. So think of it like a rough surface bulb. The way that the components are built and the chip is built on an LED bulb, yes, they will withstand any kind of vibration.
Aaron at 708 asks, do they sell older style Christmas lights that have more of the warm yellow? Because she said the white ones, when she puts them on the tree, if it snows out, she's noticed she can't even see them unless she dusts the snow off of them. Like, do they sell the yellower lights that they used to have?
You know what? That's a good question. Not really my category. LED in general, the ability to be able to create those, yes, they can. I'm just not 100% sure on the actual Christmas tree lights themselves.
You know, I never thought of that because you don't have the heat to melt the snow off.
To melt the snow, yeah. Isn't that funny? That's the way that happened. Yeah. And again, making a very good point that this is great for people that have vaulted ceilings because there's two light bulbs. I've been living in this house for 4 years that I still haven't changed. I mean, they're lit still,
yeah.
But I'm dreading the day
that I got to go up there. And when I do, I'm just going to change all of them, obviously.
We have clients that once every year we go in and we replace all of those lamps, whether they're burnt out or not, just because they don't want them to go out.
Right. Almost like a battery in here.
We don't even, I mean, when we remodel spaces, kitchens.
Trying to get the hot water heater out of there is not a do-it-yourself.
Or drained. Or
312-981-7200, taking your calls and texts. 773-S, I've heard that dimmer switches need to be replaced when switching to LED bulbs. Is it unsafe to use LED with a conventional dimmer switch, or is it a concern that only the dimming effect won't work? You do. I know they do sell new dimmer switches.
The difference is that, an older dimmer switch actually lowers the voltage, but the problem with LEDs consume so little electricity that in an old-fashioned dimmer, it will have no effect on an LED.
Or so minimal.
So minimal, yeah. So the if you want the ability to dim your light still, yes, you do need to replace the switch, and then you switch it. You go to what they call an electronic dimmer, and it's just a different type of dimmer. They look the same, but they function differently.
Yeah.
847 is an L. We've got a lot of LED questions now. Is an LED light bulb okay to use in an outdoor lantern style where an old school light bulb burned off some of the rain or snow that may drift? Well, you can. I know you can use them outside.
What he was talking about with the outside locations. Yeah,
it won't melt your snow. Yeah, it won't melt your snow, but you can still use them outside.
Yeah. But what he was saying was that they make specific ones for that heat buildup. So if you have an old lantern style with the four glass panels on it, you would want to use one of those to keep the heat issue down.
Now, that was one of the first things I replaced when I had when I was first replacing my LEDs. The outside lights, obviously, in the wintertime after 4:30, my lights are going on and they're almost on all night. Mm-hmm. Those are the easy, to me, that was the easiest decision to make as far as going outside in the middle of winter and replacing bulbs.
Yeah. You couldn't use the CFLs out there in the wintertime.
Because they wouldn't fire up.
Right. I'm right there with you. I have my my front door light on a timer. It goes on every, this time of year, it goes on at 5 o'clock in the evening. It's on until 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, that's 8 hours of running every single day automatically. And I'm right there with you.
I
watched Dollars when my incandescent was out there. I just watched Dollars go off that
thing. I have a question though. Going on to our bug topic that we haven't had today. I've noticed that since I've used the LED lights on the outside of the house, I don't get as much bug issues.
I'm with you there also. I noticed
I don't
that
know
too.
If it's the light color or that there's no heat, so they're not drawn to it that way.
Oh, interesting. I never thought about that. Have you noticed? Yeah. You know what? No, my buddy owns an inn up in Wisconsin, and he replaced all of his, he's very buggy on the lake.
Yeah.
Replaced all the LED, and it's cut the bugs by like 2/3.
Because I'm by nature preserve, so I get a lot too. And I'm not saying that they're gone,
right.
But it doesn't seem like nearly as much as when I had incandescent.
Well, I think it's the newer generation bugs that can see the LEDs, and the older ones like, what the heck is that thing over there?
They want to stay away from
that. Yeah, those young bugs, the young guys, those young punks, those whippersnappers, exactly. John, you got a question about a dryer, buddy. You're on 720 WGN.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have we just moved into a new townhome. We live on the end. Every time I put our clothes, the wet clothes, into the dryer, you start the dryer up. I know the pilot lights and everything. It gets really warm and everything, but it does not dry. I've actually checked the hose, the bendable hose going into the stack, into the wall, then going up into the attic, and there's nothing clogging it.
Your dryer vent goes up into your attic space?
Correct. It's on the second floor.
Okay, and then does it exhaust your attic?
Yes, it goes all the way up to a stack.
Okay.
I actually look at the stack, and I see, when I go outside, if it's cold enough, I can actually see it.
Okay.
It's blown out, some steam and stuff like that up there.
Do you have the hose that goes from the dryer to the wall? Is that the slinky type?
Correct.
Get rid of that. That's garbage, and that's a fire issue. It's the spring with the vinyl wrap over it.
Exactly.
Get rid of that. And if you're going to use flexible, use the aluminum flexible, because that's going to be much better. You'll get a lot better airflow with it than the other one. They also sell like the old chimney sweep kind of brush. If you've seen those, they make them for dryers. They're like 4-inch diameter brush, and you can push it through, and that'll clear all of the lint out of there too. If it was working before and now all of a sudden it's not, that's got to be an issue, something with the venting. If it never worked properly, it might be that it's too long of a run.
Never worked properly. That's why myself.
Yeah, and Jim was just saying that was his thought, was it might be too long of a run, because that does sound like it's going for a long ways.
Question,
it's going for at least 25 feet, 30 feet.
And every time you take a turn, you're putting more drag onto that.
Exactly. So what I did is I actually went up to the attic, and I actually, well, which I shouldn't have done, is took it off from up there that's going to exhausting out of the, roof. I cut that off, and I just put a nylon on there.
Yeah.
And it's actually working fine, but I don't like the issue of having it sit there like that.
Yeah, the vinyl hose is bad. Get rid of that. That's a fire hazard. And you want to still make sure that it's venting out of the attic, because if you're just dumping it into the attic, you're going to rot your roof off from the inside.
Correct.
So, but the least distance you can make from your dryer to the outside is the best, and with the least amount of turns.
I would try this just on that same premise, just to rule out that it's not the dryer. When you go to get your new hose, the new flexible hose to connect it, get one that's 12, 15 feet long. Try running it out a window. Just connect it to your dryer, put it out a window far away so that carbon monoxide isn't coming back in. But try running it straight out a window and run it through a whole drying cycle and see if it runs just fine. And if it does, then it's probably the length of the run is probably
good
the
idea.
Problem.
That's an easy solution to narrow down the problem.
All righty.
Thanks for the call, John.
I knew I brought you here for something,
Thank
Jim.
All right. Thanks for the call, John. Bob, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question about a storm door.
Yes. We've been having problems. It's at my mother's home, and she had all her doors and windows replaced. We live in the Midway area. And the problem is that we can't get her storm door to adjust. All of a sudden it started where if she has her inside door closed to the home itself, the storm door won't close all the way. Mm-hmm. But if the inside door is open, the storm door will slam. It's got one of those little hydraulic, sleeve door closers. Yeah. And we've tried adjusting it. And to adjust it to where it doesn't slam when her inside door is open, here it turns out that the door will hit the frame. Because I guess by turning that screw in too far, it pushes the top of the door. Hmm. And we just can't figure out what to do. We've replaced the cylinder. Is it just something with the door that maybe it's too airtight?
Yeah. It's a pretty common problem, really, this time of year when you take out the screen and you put in the storm. Yep. And I'll be honest, I have the same issue at my house. I just mentally, I always grab the door and close it because I know it that but when I'm leaving because of the air between
my mother it drives my mother crazy in that if
one thing you can do
and anyone leaves that her door slams
one thing you can do is when you take the screen out and you put in the storm window usually those doors have an adjustable threshold on the bottom of the door just raise that up a little bit so that there's a gap. Because what's happening is when those doors close together, you've got air compressed in there.
That's
and there's nowhere for it
to
go, so that's why the door doesn't close. So lift the threshold a little bit just for the winter, and you don't have to go real high, just enough so that the air can go out and the door will close.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call, Bob. Happy New Year to you.
Same to you.
Nancy, you got a question about LED. You're on 720 WGN.
Yes, after listening to you fellas, I went around checking my bulbs to see if they were LED or CFL, and I found one little one that does say it is spiral, but it's small, and it says it does contain mercury. Yep. But all it says on there, it doesn't say CFL or LED. It says Felt Electric ESL 13T, 13 watts, 120 VAC, 60 Hz, And it doesn't say what it is, but the fact that it contains mercury, does that mean it is a CFL?
Yes, the LEDs do not have mercury in them.
No other type of bulb has mercury.
Yeah, no other type.
For clarity.
just fluorescent lights have mercury in them.
And the fact that this says 25 watts, it's not as efficient as an LED then, correct? Because a comparable 60 watt would be 9 watts only.
Yeah, correct.
And the other one now is in a lamp. It's snaps on like to be over your sink, and it says 60 watt type A or smaller lamp. Mm-hmm. That's what the fixture says, and it says 120 volts, 60 HZ AC only. Mm-hmm. And what I have in there is another one that's spiral, but it does not say it contains mercury. It says Lightwitz H25027S. 120 volts.
Yeah, it's basically it's a fluorescent, and they all have that.
Yeah,
they may not state it, but they all have mercury in them.
That spiral thing. Yes. That spiral thing is your visual indicator. That's a fluorescent light.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call, Nancy. Appreciate it. Howard, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question about ceiling lights?
I do. Thank you for taking the call. I have two tray ceilings. It's a split level or bi-level house. Okay, and the top of the tray is 9 feet high, and I already have them in, and I have like a little cornice that I put around each tray. Total heat of the two trays is about 110 feet. I've got an outlet there. I've got a dimmer put in. I have no lights, so I'm looking for a recommendation on, say, a rope light or strip light of some sort that. Everything I looked at is wildly expensive.
Well, that is the downside to the LEDs right now. I think down the road they're going to decrease in cost. But what I would use myself is LED ribbon lighting, and I would go with the 50-50 series, which just gives you more LEDs per inch kind of a deal. But that's what we typically use for under cabinet lighting, you know, for kitchens, and it puts out a nice even light, and you can dim them. So that's what I would go with. But yeah, it's going to be expensive.
The rope lighting would be less expensive, but the thing is, you got 100 linear feet. I mean, I don't think you're going to find any inexpensive solution unless you wanted to put in. But that would require an electrician. Unless you wanted to put in fluorescent lighting, that would be the cheapest way. In terms of a bulb cost, but your installation cost is going to be really high.
And you also have a problem with doing that every time you butt a fixture together, you're going to have a dark area.
Spot, right.
You know, where the ribbon lighting, you're going to have a consistent light pattern all the way around.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what did you mean by the 50-50? What did that
well,
mean?
Well, there's different grades of the ribbon lighting, and it has to do with partially what it has to do with is how many LEDs per inch and how much light it'll produce. You can really put in any of them. For up there, you could put in a LED ribbon lighting that maybe the LEDs are further apart. But in kitchens, we like to have a lot of them because you want to have it brighter.
Yeah, the reason that rating exists, just to follow up on that, is because of the transformers are sized based on how many light units and how many individual light fixtures it's actually lighting. So the more lights per inch, the higher, the larger size transformer you'll need.
Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Thanks for the call, Howard.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take more of your calls and texts at 312-981-7200 and some more giveaways after the news next on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises here on 720 WGN. We're taking your calls, your questions, your problems, your issues, 312, and not with family, because I know you just saw your family the last 2 days. We're not taking your calls about your problems with your family or your issues.
That's a different show.
That's a whole different. That's Kathy and Judy are coming up at 10 o'clock. 312-981-7200. Let's see here. Jim, you got a question about LED in your garage?
Yeah, I've got four
2 foot. They've got two bulbs in each. Can I change those to LEDs and get them brighter than what are in those fixtures now?
You've got 2 foot fluorescent tube lighting.
Yes, sir. I have four of them.
Yeah,
I have
you can.
Two bulbs in them each.
You can actually replace those with LEDs in a tube like that as a replacement. Yes, you can.
Will they be brighter?
You can get different Kelvins, so you can change that. But I seem to think that most of the LEDs are a whiter light than a yellower light. And I know you can get all different kinds, but normally what you're seeing out there in general is the whiter light, which would probably be good in a garage application.
I can't say for sure whether it'd be brighter or not, but what I do know is that I've been in this business 20 years. We always used to do, when we do kitchens and basements, we would put in 6-inch can lighting, right, with regular incandescent bulbs. And now we do rated at the same wattage. So they say equivalent to an LED. This LED fixture is equivalent to a 65-watt bulb. But I would tell you for sure the kitchens are brighter now than when they were when we were using incandescent bulbs. So I won't say a garage will be brighter, but I know in kitchens it definitely is brighter, even though it says it's the same as a 65-watt.
Yeah.
I find that it's brighter.
It's funny. But you're going to pay a lot of money for those LED lamps.
Those tubes, yeah.
Those tube lamps.
In the garage, I kind of what's funny is I replaced it with LED, but I did a cool LED. Mm-hmm. And from the outside, my wife said it looked like – or not my wife. My son said it looked like a meth lab because it was just so bright blasting out of the glass of the garage. So we converted everything back to a softer light
like
now.
Like we were talking, earlier, my old home was a historic home, and I like that yellower glow. My new home is very contemporary, and I like the brighter white.
Yeah, different. Depends on the home. Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it, pal.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. Carol, you got a question about your windows.
Hi. Merry Christmas.
Good morning. Merry Christmas to you.
I have a townhome in Tinley Park, and I have double-hung windows. A lot of them, like 14, 16 windows. But when there's a typical traditional lock on them, but they fall down, and there's a lot of air that comes between where the gap of the window is and the sides, and I don't know how to keep the top one up.
There's what they call balances. Depending on the age of the window, the real old ones used to have weights with the ropes.
I've been here about 9 years.
How old's the house?
About 9 years.
Oh, okay. Then you have a traditional balance. There's like aluminum panels or vinyl panels on the sides of the windows. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to take those sashes out, the windows itself, take them out, and there's inside there's basically springs with a pulley system, or there could be a hydraulic tube. Those are going bad on you, and they can't hold the window anymore, or something's broken on them, and those typically need to be replaced, and that'll keep the sashes up.
And would a carpenter have to do that? Or
a carpenter can do it. There's people who just repair windows. Even a handyman, if he's familiar with those kind of windows, would be able to replace them. That's not a problem.
That's excellent. Okay, thank you so much.
Hey,
thank you for the call. Look at that. Look at you. Thanks, Carol. Hey, Ron, you're on 720 WGN. You've got a garage puddle. You don't have a dog running around in there or something, do you?
No. Okay. No garage poodle. I don't have a lab either, so.
Okay.
But, hey, guys, I'm enjoying your program. Good morning.
Good morning.
I do have a pool that puddle that generates, pull the car in after a rain or snow. Even though I try to get snow off before I pull it in the garage, it's about 4 foot in diameter. It's not quite a quarter inch deep, and I take a squeegee and squeegee it out. And is there some easy fix to that?
Not that I'm aware.
Not an easy fix, no.
What's happened is, right, when they poured the garage floor, they didn't pitch it towards the outside of the garage. It's
exactly.
Either flat or back pitch towards the house.
Okay. How about some of the self-leveling type of filler or sidewalk?
It won't really last.
No. And the fact that you're going to drive on it is going to make it last even less.
So I have to keep at it with the squeegee, I guess, huh?
That or you hire a company that will re-top the whole thing. But it's going to add thickness to it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not going to be cheap.
The rest of the garage floor is great. It's got that epoxy coating on it, and I don't know if I want to do that. So
if you're having a problem just because the water sits there and it's staining the floor or causing a problem on the concrete, I mean, they make the car pads that kind of hold the water, and then it just self-evaporates.
I've seen that
way
too, but it would.
Could do that.
Thing I can think, which sounds kind of crazy, but again, you know, just trying to think outside the box. Run a fan.
Sure.
Run a fan in the garage, which will keep air moving, which will help it. Evaporate faster.
Yeah. Okay. Could try that as well.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
So,
appreciate
sorry
it, buddy.
Can do better.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Enjoying your program.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Hey, Judy, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question about a 75 watt bulb?
Yes, I do. But first, I got to tell that last caller that Ace sells wonderful squeegees.
There you go. Nice for our sponsor that we're doing that this morning. Yeah.
Anyway, I can't seem to find a replacement for the incandescent 75 watts. And I notice when Ace, or my usual spot to shop, but when they have sales on bulbs, it's always the equivalent to a 60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm going to have to pay a real lot to get a 75 or if they just don't make them. So can you tell me what numbers I'd be looking for under lumens or something for that?
I wish I had that for you.
You called a little too late. We had our guy in here.
Yeah, he would know that.
Yeah, I tried.
Smart as a whip, that young guy.
Yeah.
What are you trying to use the lamp for? Is it?
I have a bathroom, and I have a dressing area in the bedroom. And 60 is too dim, and 100 is too bright, but when you're getting cataracts in the family, between that and the
I know
lunch,
what you're talking about. Well, if you did the 100 and put them on a dimmer, you'll actually save more money even if you took a 100-watt lamp and dimmed it to the equivalent of a 75, you're going to be spending less energy to light that than a 75-watt bulb. But what you may have to go into is just an LED bulb now, and they make those. So they make them? Yeah, you just have to find it's got to be the right base, and it has to be – if you're looking at one that would need 360 degrees of lighting as opposed to just like a can light, a ceiling light, it's just shooting down. If you have this in a lamp on the table, you're going to want one that lights all the way around.
75 watts equals, in an LED, about 1,100 lumens.
Oh, you're holding on to this, Dave.
That's great.
You guys can leave now. No, please don't. Please don't.
I know they exist because I try in my own house to keep a stock of bulbs, and I know I have 60s, 75s, and I think there's another size, too, I keep in stock.
But
so
they
I know
are those. Required to discontinue making
no,
those?
No, in LEDs.
Oh, in LEDs. Okay.
I have the equivalent. I have the idiot signs on there saying equivalent to.
Yeah. Oh.
So I know I have equivalent LEDs in a 75 watt.
Oh, you do have them.
So they do exist.
Okay, I'll just have to find them, and they probably will cost more money because they're never.
You know what? They're
going to
cost.
Demand.
They're going to cost you more money, but they're going to last way longer than what you would have an incandescent last.
Right.
So it'll make up in the long run because you're not buying as many lamps and you're using less electricity.
Well, and the reason
I won't need a ladder, and so that might be better too to keep going up there every few months to change bulbs.
Yes,
and the reason they're harder to find is because the way the government is. Canceling out incandescent bulbs as they're starting by wattage. So it may be that they start, and I don't know this for sure, but it may be that they started with 60 watts, that they will no longer make incandescent 60-watt bulbs, and
the
that's
most
why
common.
You see so many of those.
Yeah, it's
right going to
be phased out in phases like that. Yes.
Oh, okay.
All right, I'll tell you what, Judy, do you have plans for New Year's?
Yes, in the evening we have dinner plans.
All right, how about a $50 gift certificate to Weber Grill? Our folks brought us some great breakfast here, and they brought us some gift cards. Can I get you one of those?
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, Judy, hang on. We'll get you those.
And the Bloody Marys.
Yeah, the Bloody Marys and the vintage old fashions. That's what you got to get, Judy.
Oh, I love those. Thank you.
All right, Judy, hang on the line. Joey will talk to you. Happy New Year to you as well. Absolutely. Gary, you're on 720 WGN. You got water coming through the ceiling. Not right now, I hope.
Yep.
Okay, tell us the problem.
Okay, We had a rain the other day on Wednesday, and I live in a brick building. We just had a roof, new roof put on the top about a month ago, and water's coming in the ceiling, through the walls. Where do you think the problem is?
I'm guessing the roof.
Yes. What kind of roof is it? Is it a flat roof or is it?
It's a flat roof.
Okay.
Yeah.
My guess is it's probably puddled up there, and that's why you're still seeing water.
You probably have a seam that's not closed.
Yeah.
Whereabouts, like in the roof? Is it on the edge, in the middle, coming through fixtures? Like, can you pinpoint a location within the ceiling?
It came through the. If you go about 8 inches from the outside of the building to the inside of my wall, that's where the problem is.
Yeah, it's at the
edge.
It went through the
windows as well. Water was going through the windows, through the wall, through the ceiling, onto the floor, into my carpeting.
Yeah. You got to call the roofer. It sounds like maybe at the parapet or at the wall up above, they didn't flash it correctly or with the winds or something. Maybe it wasn't done complete and the winds pulled it up or something. But call the roofer. That sounds like definitely the roofer's situation.
We had a problem before this in the building. Mm-hmm. And that was before the roof was even done. And it was the same situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll be honest. Roofers are human beings. Maybe somebody missed something.
What?
I know. And you don't like to think of it that way, but they really are not machines. And, you know, someone forgets to do something.
Do you think it could be the brick?
It's a possibility.
Highly unlikely. Not if it's coming in the ceiling. If it were coming in your windows only, I would maybe think.
And if it's still
brick.
Coming in and he's got a flat roof, it's probably puddling up there. You know what? You call the roofer. I always say give the contractor a chance to, you know, accidents do happen and problems do occur. Give the contractor the opportunity to make it right. If he doesn't want to make it right, he or she doesn't want to make it right, then you go other avenues. But give them the ability to try to correct the problem first. You owe them that, I think.
Yeah, and depending on how much water you have, you may want to contact your insurance.
You don't think it's the problem of the brick?
It's hard to say, you know, when you're talking about something over the phone like that, we're not seeing all of the application. But what's making me think it's the roof is because you're saying you have water right now. We haven't had rain for a while. And if it's a flat roof, flat roofs sometimes will puddle water. And if that's the case, it's got a tank of water up there that's continually feeding into your apartment or your condo.
Right. It could be that your gutters are backed up. It could. Yep. I mean, there's a lot of things, but
we usually start with
what happened that could have been the problem that has created this new problem.
All right, Gary, thanks for the call and Happy New Year to you. Okay, we've got a couple. We'll take some more callers. We're also going to give away one more $50 Weber Restaurant gift card, plus a Mr. Fix-It Lou's Crew T-shirt, courtesy of our friends at Fox Home Center in Alsip and created by Rags of Honor, helping veterans get back on their feet. 312-981-7200. More when we get back next on 720 WGN.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.
Dave Player in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show here on 720 WGN, along with my pals Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry and Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises. We're taking your calls and your texts at 312-981-7200. We might have time for one or two more calls, and we've got one right now from Tom. He's got a question about hardwood floors. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. What's your question, sir?
I've got two different floors. I got regular hardwood floors that were sanded and stained and finished on site, and then I put in a mirage floor. It's got the aluminum oxide finish. I've been cleaning them for years with just vinegar and water, as I was told to, but I want to deep clean them. What would you recommend?
The only thing I've ever seen, and I hear the radio commercials, but the only thing I've ever seen or heard of anybody doing as far as deep cleaning hardwood floors would be with steam. I personally have never seen it done. And I had aluminum oxide floors in my house as well at one point. but I never had any kind of steam cleaning done on them.
Okay. What about like the Rejuvenate product that they?
I've never used it.
I haven't used it either. I'll tell you, it sounds kind of silly, but I have tiger wood floors in my house, and what I use is water and an old bath towel, and I wrap the bath towel around a hard bristle push broom.
Okay.
And I get the towel just moist, not like dripping wet, just moist.
Right.
Wrap it around the broom, and I scrub with the bristle broom, and they come out looking great.
Yeah. Okay. With the aluminum oxide's a little bit different. I was going to say, if it were me and I were looking to make a visual difference in my floors, I would go for a light sand and a recoat versus a steam cleaning of my wood floors.
Steam I worry about because steam tends to, like in wood, will open up the grain. Now, depending on how old that finish is, if it's starting to wear, you might cause more problems than not.
Right. And the aluminum oxide, they won't do a light sand and recoat because it's different products we use.
Thank you, Tom, for the question.
Yep, sorry about that.
How about, Tom, a Mr. Fix-It Lou's Crew t-shirt, courtesy of our friends at Fox Home Center in Alsip and created by Rags of Honor, helping veterans get back on their feet.
Great.
That'd be fantastic.
All right. Hang on the line, Tom. Thanks so much. All right. Jerry. You might be the last caller. Let's hear what your question is about your shower faucet. You're on 720 WGN.
Hi, it's Jerry. We have a single handle faucet, and when I turn the dial counterclockwise to about 2 o'clock, which would be a normal good warm shower, the hot water isn't engaging.
All right. And it's worked in the past. It's not like you have a brand new valve in there or anything.
Correct. It's getting older, so we figure the valve is probably worn.
That would be my first guess, especially if you have a lot of mineral deposits in your water. If all the other faucets are working fine, you're not seeing any change. Otherwise, it might be your water heater. But
it's just that faucet, and we do have very hard water. We have a softener, but it is hard water.
Do you know what brand that faucet is?
I believe it's a Moen.
It's a pretty simple fix to replace the cartridge in it. I would try that first.
Is that cartridge available at the through the manufacturer or through a store?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
You can get them just about anywhere nowadays.
Ace has them, and they have the tool to get them out.
Yeah.
And I think they'll let you borrow the tool.
Okay, good. And just make sure you turn your water off, the main, and then drain your lines, so that there's no pressure in there before you open that. Because once you open that, water's coming everywhere if you didn't shut that off.
Okay.
It's like opening a fire hydrant.
Okay, and then I have one other question. Do we need to take the handle off, or do we need to take it off to see behind the wall?
You take the handle off, and you take that trim ring off, the big disc thing. And then there's once you get that, there's a little pin you have to remove, and then you pull that cartridge out, and you put the new one in. Just make notes as you're pulling it apart so that you have your hot water going the right way. If you have it backwards, you're going to have to pull it out and flip it 180 and put it back in. So,
okay, great.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
And Jerry, how about a Happy New Year's gift? How about a $50 Weber restaurant gift card?
Oh, thank you. I would appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Happy New Year to you. Hang on the line, Jerry.
All day, everybody's getting stuff but us. Well, no, we did get the Bloody Mary.
You got some Bloody Marys. Right, you got some bacon, all the bacon you can eat. You got some
eggs. I ate a lot of bacon.
It is all the bacon you can eat. It really is.
Nice. Well, my thanks. Lou's off today. He will be back next week. My thanks to Mike Holmes from Creative Carpentry. And again, how do they find out a little bit more information about you, Mike?
CreativeCarpentry.net or ccremodelers@ymail.com.
There you go, and 630-892-0720. That's 630-892-0720. And Jim Sullivan from Tate Enterprises, how about you?
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Jim@tateent.com is my email address.
That's TateEnt.com.
Yep. 630-986-0855 is the office phone number. Again, I'm mostly Hinsdale, Burr Ridge, Clarton Hills, western suburbs area there.
Beautiful.
Yeah, thank
guys,
you.
Guys, always a pleasure hanging out with you.
Yeah, it's
our pleasure.
And thanks for breakfast.
Absolutely. You're welcome. Lou's back next week, and Kathy and Judy are up at 10. We'll talk to them next on 720 WGN.